This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to Pink Popcorn, the movie review show that finds a little bit of homo in every film. I'm Paul Tonta.
And I'm Kylie Eddy.
Wow, we've got a big show. After the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
The gay films keep on coming.
Thanks to Pete Dillon from Cravings.
Yeah, he didn't leave us any cake.
I know, damn it.
What's cake?
I know, there was cake in... Yeah.
How cheeky.
That's okay.
Like we need any more sugar. We are kind of known for being a little bit on the hyper side.
That's okay. More hyper is more goodness. So the films this week, we've got the new Keira Knightley star of film. Well, there's Keira Knightley and there's also Andrew...
Garfield. And
Carey Mulligan.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. And Never Let Me Go.
Absolutely. And then we're talking about the new Javier Bardem starring film Beautiful, which he was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actor.
Yeah, he really eats up the screen in that film for its 2+ hour running length.
Yes.
Let that be a warning to you.
And we're talking about, that was a film that actually he won the Best Actor Award at the Cannes Film Festival last year. And another film that was at Cannes is Heartbeat. It's a French-Canadian film from Xavier Dolan. He's got two films that are screening at Acme coming up this week. The other one is I Killed My Mother. It's disgusting. This guy is 21 years old and he's made two films.
And not only has he made two films, they are both...
Brilliant film.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, really, I did call him a wunderkind just before, but I don't use that term lightly because you could just go, oh, what a precocious brat. But they're so soulful and wise beyond their years. Oh, my God, I think I can feel wax lyrical moment coming on.
So we'll be waxing lyrical about the films and also interviewing Christy Matheson, who works at Acme, where the films will be screening. We'll be discussing, the films and Xavier and all things French-Canadian.
And he's queer. As well,
which he is,
and so confident in his. I mean, really, they're coming out films like you've never seen before, really, is my feeling. So anyway, we'll be talking heaps about that.
Absolutely. So if you want to, contact us, tell us what you've liked the movies the last little while, tell us some favourites from the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, contact us on 0427 joy949 or email on air at joy.org.au or Facebook. Kylie, Facebook, you're the social media queen. I'm in the dark ages. I'm stuck in 1982, basically.
I know. You don't even know what a computer is.
What? What's this thing in front of me? Well, it's a big square thing with...
No clue. Yeah, so all you need to do is just search for Pink Popcorn and we've got a gorgeous little pic of a box of Pink Popcorn. Oh, stretch your brain on that one. So we're always delighted if you come along and join the conversation on Facebook.
Up now, we've got Post-Breakup Sex by The Vaccines. This is Pink Popcorn with Kylie and Paul on Joy 94.9.
This is a Pink Popcorn podcast.
This is Pink Popcorn with Kylie and Paul on Joy 94.9.
In the film Never Let Me Go, as children, Ruth, Kathy and Tommy spend their childhood in a seemingly idyllic English boarding school. As they grow into young adults, they find that they have to come to terms with the strength of the love that they feel for each other while preparing themselves for the haunting reality that awaits them.
My name is Kathy H. I'm 28 years old. These days I spend most of my time not looking forwards, but looking back to what happened to us. Me, Tommy, and Ruth.
Students of Hailsham are special.
None of you will do anything except live the life that has already been set out for you. You will become adults, but only briefly. You have to know who you are and what you're created to do. It's the only way you'll lead decent lives.
Once the truth had been revealed, it changed everything between us.
I think that clip just gives a really fantastic feeling for the ambience of this film. Mm. It's beautiful music, beautiful cinematography, and incredibly subtle storytelling.
It's I've not seen the film, but it's from the novel by Kazuo Ishiguro, who most famously won the Booker Prize for The Remains of the Day. So he's Japanese-born, but British author. And he really... It's quite extraordinary how he plumbs the depths of Britishness and British society. And this is an interesting film because is it set in the future or is it...
Well, this is one of the amazing things about it. It is classified as a science fiction film, but rather than being set, like most science fiction films, in the near future or in the far off future, it's actually set in the past. So what it's doing is it's actually giving us an alternative reality, and it's set in the history. So it's actually set, it kind of starts in the 60s, and then it kind of goes through, I guess, from the late 50s through the 60s as these their young children grow up into young adults. So it's actually kind of weird. It's the most grungy, like, non-science fiction looking science fiction film you're ever likely to see.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of amazing.
But it's, and in terms of, I mean, I unfortunately do know a little bit about the plot of sorts, but is there a spoiler in the film you don't really want to know, tell people too much about?
Well, look,
the kids are there for?
Well, what I would suggest is that I think it is best going to this film knowing as little as possible, but most people who are going to go this film probably have read the book,
right,
I
yes,
would say.
Yep.
And also, there is a major shift from how the book plays out and how the film plays out is that actually at the very beginning of the film, there's a title card that actually explains what happens.
Oh,
it says,
okay,
in the 1950s, there was a major medical breakthrough,
right,
that changed the face of the world and now our life expectancy is over 100 years. And so you're, okay, already from the beginning going, what's this medical discovery? Look, it's pretty clear what it is. So that kind of mystery element is gone. And instead, the story really focuses on the love triangle between the Keira Knightley, Carey Mulligan, and Andrew Garfield characters, all of which I'm just getting chills on the back of my neck speaking about their performances.
Mm.
Because they're really restrained. Really. I mean, and Carey Mulligan really owns this film. She kind of acts as the narrator.
Right.
And in terms amazing.
Of, yeah, she's wonderful. I mean, if people don't know who... I mean, Keira Knightley, I think everybody knows Keira Knightley. And Carey Mulligan was in An Education, which was, you know, her breakthrough Oscar-nominated role. And Andrew Garfield, most famously, is in The Social Network. He was the best friend.
Yeah, I mean, he is transformed,
yep,
in this film. And so sensitive. Look, it is pretty... I don't know if harrowing is the right word. It actually is kind of hopeful. And I guess the message of this film is saying, no matter how long we have to live in this world, we need to appreciate every moment. And there's something really heroic about these characters who are doomed from the beginning and yet struggle to find their own humanity. And it is absolutely heart-wrenching.
Yeah,
it starts a little bit slowly and it kind of draws you into this because, you know, this idyllic boarding school and isn't this English and lovely, and yes, there's a few little twists and turns, but it just gradually layers and builds up until, you know, the climax really for me pays off. I know some people have said, oh, I didn't feel anything from this film, and I can't see how that is possible.
You want to reach and go, can I just check your pulse? Oh, wait, you're not living. You're a zombie.
Like, I mean, I knew kind of what was coming, and even then, I was like, I know what's coming. Don't cry.
Hand me the tissues.
And I was sobbing.
Floods of tears.
So even just seeing the trailer now makes me kind of well up. Listening to that little clip that we just played, yep, and that haunting melody of the music makes me, and her beautiful soft voice, just being so calm about the realities of this absolutely horrible fate that awaits them.
I'm a big fan of older British cinema, say 40s and 50s and even earlier, that strong British resolve. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing this because of, you know, that, you know, one of those things. I love those, you know, just that steeliness that Brits have and yet portrayed on screen so well.
I mean, part of what I think is so fascinating about this as well is, like, you just go, why didn't they run away? Why don't they try and escape? Why don't they, you know, fly overseas? I don't know, all these kind of questions come up, and yet there is no talk of that at all. So it is definitely focused on the love story and also their resigned exploration of their fate. It is interesting how grey and dark and, you know, the kind of middle section set in. So basically it has, when they're young children, set in a boarding school, which is quite idyllic and beautiful. And then they have a transition period where they live in this kind of country halfway house waiting for their Their turn. They have all these special terms for exactly how the procedures are done. And then there's kind of the last section where they're in the city and they're in hospitals, and all of it is just kind of quite beautifully grimy.
Oh, I'm looking forward
to
this.
If that makes sense.
Queer content?
Yeah, there's no queer content.
No, okay.
Yeah, actually, I lie.
No,
there is
Kerry Mulligan and Brunelli, a bit of a glance at school crushes.
There is a very intense friendship between them. And, you know, there is jealousy between them. Mm. But mainly that is focused outwards to the male in the love triangle.
Yep.
Though I would say there is one moment with one of the teachers, who's the head mom of the school. Later on, it's revealed that I think she might be... I don't know if this is explored more in the book, but it seems like she has a lesbian lady lover. That they may be. I mean, that's just me projecting. It's not at all covered.
Yeah, quick content, not a lot. How many stars would you give it?
I'm giving this 4 out of 5.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, and it's in release right now?
It's in release now. Check out your cinema listings. It's limited release, but I think it will be around for a while because it is certainly a fantastic quality film.
Very emotional, star power film. All right, that was Never Let Me Go. Coming up next on the show, we are interviewing Christy Matheson from Acme about Heartbeats, and then later up, we'll be reviewing Heartbeats and I Killed My Mother. This is Kylie and Paul with Pink Popcorn on Joy 94.9.
This is a Pink Popcorn podcast.
We're very excited now. We have a very special guest in the studio, Christy Matheson from Acme, one of the programmer extraordinaires, who will be screening Heartbeats and I Killed My Mother, Xavier Dolan's, his two films in a long play season starting Thursday. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you very much for having me along.
Very, very exciting. Oh, gosh almighty. I'm just so excited about talking about these films. But first, we're excited about having you here.
Oh, well,
a little bit of background in terms of Acme. How long have you been at Acme for?
I've been there for about 4 years now.
Wonderful.
And I'm very lucky because I get to obviously sit and watch a lot of movies. There's a lot of dull aspects to the job as well, re-invoicing, etc. But ultimately, it's super fun, and I work with some really lovely people. So we get to sit around and talk about movies a lot every day, which is a great pleasure. So.
Something that we understand.
Yes,
we
exactly.
love that as
it's
well.
Really fun.
So when you're curating a program like this, what would draw you to someone like Xavier's work? Why, you know, how did this come across your radar?
I think with his films, they are of a really particular sensibility, but when you see his films, they're genuinely exciting. And obviously, that is one of the great things about cinema. But when you see especially a film like Heartbeats, you realize that you don't get to see many films like that in a year. Like, it's quite extraordinary because it's got all this fantastic energy and, you know, it sort of draws on all these cinematic signposts, I guess, but he does them. It's such a stylish film that it's really hard to ignore it. So I felt really excited when I saw it and then thought that I just think it's kind of quite relevant and people in Melbourne will really get into it. It's very much like the feel of this city. I think he's really got something quite, that a city like Melbourne really gets into.
Yeah,
so I think that.
And Xavier, he's that little precocious one. He's just turned 22 years old. So these two films, his first film, I Killed My Mother, he wrote it when he was 17. And then Heartbeats, he made the next year.
Mm.
So like he was, 19 or 20 when he made them. And, you know, there's such a freshness to those films and there's like an immediacy to those films that I think that's the thing that, draws us to see them. Whereabouts did you see them? Do you see the festivals overseas?
I saw I Killed My Mother at the Sydney Film Festival, and then Heartbeats I saw later. But I think the thing that's interesting is he is really young, but he's making films about what he knows.
Mm.
And that's really refreshing. I mean, a lot of young filmmakers try and make films about subjects or topics that maybe they haven't lived through yet, because maybe they feel like being young and making films about that is too frivolous.
Yeah.
But I think that's why the films are so great, because when you watch them, it makes you remember exactly how you felt at that age. Like, I think that's why I really liked them as well. He's sort of dealing with this notion of outsiders, and I think anyone that's ever been an outsider will watch these films and go, oh my gosh, you get a little bit embarrassed, you feel a little bit nostalgic, but there's a definite truth to them, because he's not He's not making films about something he doesn't know.
And that's the thing. There is a truth. There's a believability and an immediacy about these films that, you know, that is just so appealing. And that's the thing that, I mean, I personally love the films because of, that's one of the reasons why.
But, I mean, the thing that I find fascinating is, yes, he is talking about things that have only recently happened to him, yet with a sophistication of a filmmaker who is far... You know, he's far wiser than his years because I think there are lots of filmmakers who are trying to make films, and yet this just feels like he was born to be a filmmaker. Do you get a sense that his talent is, you know, it's something that he was born? Is he like a gift?
Yeah, but I think, too, the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, like I said, there's all these big filmic signposts in both of the films, you know, all this sort of beautiful slow motion and people just go, oh, Wong Kar-wai or... But... Obviously, he's someone that has watched, you know, he's obviously got a really fantastic grasp of pop culture, like his use of music. He chooses great music for, and not just contemporary stuff, but older stuff. And he's got, so I kind of feel like not only is he making films about stuff he knows, but he really knows his thing, which is pop culture. And lots of filmmakers say, I want to be a filmmaker. And then you say, what do you really like? What films do you like? They're like, I don't really go to the movies. And you're you'd never find, you know, you'd never find a painting student that doesn't say, oh, my favourite painters are blah, 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 blah. I go to the gallery. So I kind of feel like, yeah, he's got a gift, but there's got to be a lot of hard work behind that. It's not just, you know.
And he's also the thing, he's the director, he's a screenwriter, he's a producer, and he's the lead actor.
You know, he does everyone's hair.
Hair, oh my God. And
his hair is fantastic.
Wow. I just bowed his hair tenfold.
I wish my hair looked like that. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so stylish, so gorgeous. Mm. I mean, it fascinates me how he can multi-skill like this. And he's in both films, particularly in I Killed My Mother. I mean, he's the central character. He would be in 80% of the scenes. And yet he's still directing, and it doesn't really feel like, I think sometimes when they're actor directors, you can kind of get a sense, oh, yes, they're directing that, but it's just so naturalistic.
Yeah, again, I think because he's probably working with people that, you know, I think the people he's working with are people he's probably friends with, and so there's like an intimacy that's already probably built up off screen. It nothing feels forced in these films, even though they're hyper stylish and, you know, but they don't feel forced, which is really lovely to when you're watching them.
Yeah, they're wonderful. And they're, so the screenings are starting in Heartbeat, starts this Thursday?
Yes, so the 7th of April.
Yep, and then I Killed My... It goes until the 1st of May.
Yeah.
And then I Killed My Mother. And that has... I Killed My Mother only has a limited number of sessions.
Yeah, we're mainly screening Heartbeats because it's the new film. But I think for people who've already seen I Killed My Mother... they'll be really excited about Heartbeats. But if you do see Heartbeats, I think you'll be so intrigued and you'll want to see the first film. So we've put on a few sessions of that in the hope that will kind of satisfy people who might not have caught that film yet.
And I also think actually that even though Heartbeats is kind of like a love triangle between two guys and a girl, that I Killed My Mother actually has kind of more queer content in terms of explicit queer content.
Yeah, it has one of the most... amazingly beautiful, fantastical sex scenes, I think, ever captured on film. It's so amazing. It's like Jackson Pollock meets a sex scene. It's really great. It's so worth seeing.
And it's like a coming out film that doesn't feel like a coming out film. Yeah. So definitely, if you've seen Heartbeats, I Killed My Mother is a fantastic companion piece to this.
Definitely. I think you'd be foolish to miss either of them.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Christy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And more information can be found at acme.net.au. Coming up on the show is Beautiful, the new Javier Bardem starring film. This is Wide Eyes from Local Natives. This is Pink Popcorn with Kylie and Paul on Joy 94.9.
This is a Pink Popcorn podcast.
And up now we'll be talking about Heartbeats, the new film from Xavier Dolan.
Marie and Francis are best friends who fall foul of love and each other when they topple head over heels for the same man. His matinee idol looks casual chum and indiscriminate flirtation send our heroes into a twist of epic proportions.
Ooh. We just interviewed Christy Matheson at Acme about the film and Xavier's first film, I Killed My Mother. Heartbeats is his latest film. It won, well, is it the Cannes Film Festival last year? And it won the best film at the Sydney Film Festival last year, the competition, which is a major, major deal. I think this film is just from the bat, I think it's just so superb. I've seen it a number of times, and it's just the most exuberant, joyful celebration of just being young and in love and all the craziness that goes along with, you know, falling in love, basically. And falling in love with the wrong... For me, it's falling in love with the wrong guy. Like, you know, I think that's...
That's the story of your life,
oh,
is it?
Oh.
Well, certainly love triangles as well. There are some incredible moments where... And certainly this, the character who plays their love interest, he is such a flirt. And yep, one moment, he's got all the eyes for Xavier. And Xavier's so happy. And then he just casually glances across to his lady friend, and you know, her heart's a flutter,
yeah,
and that this rivalry, they're best friends, and they suddenly are at each other's catty best.
Exactly. And the boy, because Xavier's character, Francis, he's, you know, he's openly gay, and Marie, you know, he's best friend, she's straight woman. And Nicholas, who's the object of affection, they meet at a party, he accepts the flirtation from both of them openly, but you know, he doesn't, you just don't know. Like, it's just this constant tease. It's just so teased out. They go on, you know, a little trip in the countryside, and they both buy him, you know, birthday presents, and it's just all this little... It's just... I mean, I think it's so relatable. It is absolutely... You know, you are there. You've been there. But even if you haven't been there, you know, in this situation, it feels real. It feels fresh. It's fantastic.
Well, I think, you know, being young and in your early 20s, and of course, this is speaking from, you know, he directed this as well and produced it and did the costume art direction.
Yeah, and
which
the
is,
hair.
Oh, my God. Sensational hair and some great glasses going on. You know, it really feels like this was not so far removed from what he experienced yesterday.
Yep.
And it did, I'm slightly older than that, and it did take me back to some of those crazy relationships that I had in my 20s, where you're lusting after the ideal of someone, and they're just giving you the tiniest little hint of something that you interpret into this grand big thing that is only going to break your heart.
Oh, yes.
I mean, stylistically, this film really loves its slow-mo. It loves its vivid colours. It loves its nod to retro fashion.
Yep.
And yet, at the same time, it mixes in really contemporary music, contemporary fashion, but just with a complete ease switching between the two.
Mm. And a lot of people wanted to, you know, if people want to criticize the film, you know, some critics have, you know, the style over substance, which I kind of don't get, because, I mean, yeah, it's incredibly stylish, but I think it is there. Like, for me,
has substance.
It has an emotional core. Like, you really do feel these guys, and you know, because, again, we've been there, that it's... There's going to be some, you know, moment where, you know, the walls, you know, sort of come crumbling down. But, you know, they're young. They're going to pick themselves up and move on. And I just think, look, the last scene in this film is so superb. And it's, look, it's a funny film as well. It's wryly humorous. But I think the last scene, you know, it's all about just friendships will endure. You know, these two, they're mates and, you know, they're...
Even though they're like besties.
Yeah.
And you know what? No one gives a backhanded compliment like a gay. Like, there are some... some moments, there are some lines in there where he just goes, oh, you're wearing that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess in some kind of circles that's considered bohemian chic or whatever he says. Like, it's just so with daggers. And she in return goes, oh, I didn't realize that orange was in. You know?
The thing about the film as well, I mean, I just think there are so many pleasures in this film. They're ridiculously good looking, all three of them. Like, it's just quite stupid. We're talking about Greg Araki film last week with Kaboom and his cast. You know, he has this ability to pick beautiful people. It's like Gus Van Sant, you know, these queer filmmakers who can pick, you know,
They know talent.
They know beauty. And that's the thing. There's a wonderful film, a wonderful scene in the film, which it's to the a knife song, which we'll be playing after this. It's just, they see him in a party and it's just their vision of what he is and their idea of perfection. And I could go on for hours about this film. I just think it's just an absolute sensory delight. I love it.
Do you think that it helps that it's in French?
Well, yes. And it's also, I mean, it's Canadian. So, I mean, French-Canadian. It's a good French-Canadian, by the way. It's not the bad French-Canadian. So, but I think, yes, it does. It definitely lends itself, you know.
There's something romantic. I wonder about if it was in English, if I would have the same feel, the same feel about it.
Yeah.
But certainly having it in French gives it a whole extra dimension of romance.
It does. It helps a lot. His new film, actually, he's made, because this guy doesn't sit down. He's a former actor. Well, he is an actor, but he's in his when he was a child.
He was a child actor.
Totally incredible. He's making a brand new film. He's actually filming it at the moment. It's called Lawrence Always. And yeah, it's a transgender drama. Really ambitious film. Really ambitious film. So that'll be out. Well, he's probably finishing. It'll be out in 2 seconds. But so, you know, he's a filmmaker that doesn't rest on his laurels. Kylie, what would you give this?
I'm giving this 4 out of 5. Yeah. I really loved it.
Yeah, me too. 4 out of 5. It's fabulous.
And I think on the big screen, it will look sumptuous.
Yes, and queer content through the roof.
Yeah,
so,
it's great.
Which is, you know, and I Killed My Mother as well is playing, and we discussed it before, and that's fabulous and queer content. Even more through the roof on that one. So they're at Acme in limited release. So check our Facebook page for more details. Kylie, what's our Facebook page again?
Oh, you just search for Pink Popcorn on Facebook.
Oh, okay, there we go.
We don't have a / Pink Popcorn because, you know, that would be too organised. You just have to look for us.
All right, up next, we'll be discussing the new Javier Bardem starring film, Beautiful. But right now, it's Pass On This by The Knife. This is Pink Popcorn with Kylie and Paul on Joy 94.9.
This is a Pink Popcorn podcast.
In Beautiful, Javier Bardem plays Uxbal, a hustler in Barcelona's underground economy, who acts as a facilitator, striking deals, greasing police palms for various exploitative activities involving illegal immigrants. One is a network of African street vendors, the other a setup involving a warehouse full of Chinese workers, for whom Uxbal sets up a shady work contract on a construction site. He's also looking after his 2 young children alone and is separated from his bipolar alcoholic wife, who is meanwhile having an affair with Uxbal's nightclub runner brother Titi. On top of that, there is more. Good lord, there is more. On top of that, the father that Uxbal has never known is being exhumed so that the sons can sell his burial plot, and Uxbal has only a short time to live as he's been diagnosed with prostate cancer. There's actually more, but I really don't think that we can go into everything in this film.
There are so many subplots in this film.
The film's 148 minutes, so there's a lot to fit in.
Yes, it was. Well, I actually think even for the length of the film, which is way too long, but even that, there's so much to cover in this. I mean, it's pretty amazing that they do, you know, it's quite ambitious in its scope. And for my money, I think that's part of its failing.
Right.
Is that there are too many things. You know what? You could have half of the things going on, and even that would probably still be too many for me.
In terms of context, the film is directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu, who's most famous. He's had the 3 films, Amores Perros, 21 Grams and Babel. So if you've seen any of those films, you know what territory you're in. You're deep in, you know, it's
bleak land,
yeah, exactly.
I call it.
I was trying to call it another word, bleak land, capital B.
I don't like any of those other films.
Yeah, right.
And so, for me, this is like hell.
Yeah, so I think I loved Amores Perros, his first film, which is set in
That's
Mexico.
That's probably the best of the bunch.
I really disliked 21 Grams, I thought. I don't remember too much about it, but I do remember watching it from minute one going, I don't like this film at all.
It
was like being in hell.
Yeah.
And then Babel, which was just pretentious twaddle for me. He's, you know, all the characters around the world.
And I know, Bath.
So this one, I mean, and the other...
That's my official opinion, Bath. Well,
and those 3 films are written by Guillermo Arriaga, who... really famously in those films, you know, the non-linear narrative, and so it's all mixed up. Whereas this one, they had Iñárritu and Arriaga had a massive falling out. So they obviously don't work together anymore. And so it's a whole new, you know, sort of set of screenwriters on this, including Iñárritu himself. So it doesn't have it has a very linear narrative. That's the one thing we can, you know, if people didn't like the other 3 films, this is a positive in that step.
And it does just follow one character.
It does follow
really,
one character. You know. And Javier Bardem, I mean, whatever you think of the film, I just think he's just such an extraordinary performer, and it's an amazing role. And it just, I mean, he got an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor.
And deservedly so.
Deservedly so. And I think he really just, it kind of cements his role as just one of the world's great actors. He just has such commanding presence. You know, he's just phenomenal. Like, his eyes are so soulful.
And not only that, he has the commitment of the character to really take it to some dark places. And it's quite an interesting balance because you're meant to empathise with this guy who is really a bastard.
Yeah.
And he is doing some things right. For example, he is raising his two kids on his own. But at the same time, he kind of terrorizes them on occasion. He loses his temper. He's not maybe, you know, there's a fantastic scene early on where he's kind of so sweet and gentle with them, and it's obvious he loves them. Then at the same, like 2 seconds later, they've pissed him off. That's it. And,
yeah.
and he loses his temper. And so it's such an amazing contrast. And to still have that kind of, I really was gunning for him and rooting for him and hoping that he would work it out.
Yep.
Of course, he was never going to. But anyway, I was hoping he would.
I mean, the thing about this film, the screws are tightening ever so slowly because, you know, yeah, he's diagnosed at the start. Oh, he's diagnosed a little bit in, but he has a doctor's appointment. And you know something's wrong. You know, he's peeing, you know, coloured
urine. He's peeing blood.
Yeah.
Well, that's, so yep. that's a bad
it's sign. It's a bad sign. So basically, this film, you really, you know, the screws are being tightened. And so, you know, and the thing, the scene you were talking about before is a great example of, you know, he wants to be, you know, you can see that he loves his children, and they're quite young. They're, you know, sort of about the, you know, 6 to 10 mark. And he just gets frustrated with them because, you know, they're doing things that kids do, you know, when they're eating, kicking the table. And he just gets really angry, you know. But I think it's exacerbated because he is sick. You know, he's physically in pain. But all of that in theory, but I kind of just went, okay, I know that's supposed to happen, but I'm, even though he's such a great actor, I found that for me, the one of the biggest flaws in this film is I just think the writing's not there. I just think it's just, there's, it's all sort of laid out. It's, you know, this and this and this and this, but there's no real kind of extra little layers and texture there that makes a film like this that would normally soar. Yeah.
It just feels like a lot of stuff happening.
It does.
Just a lot of stuff and a lot of, and look, at the end, I think, kind of emotionally blackmail you at the end, and there are a couple of scenes which are really heavy and full on and certainly had me crying.
Yep.
But I don't think it's because of good storytelling. I just think because it was so shocking and that you would have to not have a heart to feel for some of these people it's so tragic.
Yeah, there's a lot of really tragic events.
Oh, there's some really, look, I would say quite graphic and quite, you know, it's not violence in, I guess, the Hollywood kind of art. It's really dirty, gritty, grimy.
Yeah.
People living in just squalor and poor conditions and being so marginalized and just damaged.
But I mean, absolutely not. I think there's, but a lot of people do, you know, absolutely, you know, find that they don't really want to go there. I know, definitely. But there's a lot of people who find that this film, you know, has been very highly regarded in some quarters. And, you know, it is this, you know, sort of transcendental experience. I didn't personally find that. In terms of queer content, there's actually two characters who, one, the Asian, the Chinese man, I don't know the names, unfortunately. But he, the guy who runs a sweatshop, who has a, who harbours the workers for the construction site in the bottom of his warehouse. He's married, but he has a gay lover, so he's closeted. And that's kind of an interesting little, you know, kind of subtext
there. Yeah, there are quite a few interesting moments that kind of add to that character's storyline. And it does actually have some quite important plot twists about how that impacts on Javier's character because he's kind of helping to facilitate these illegal immigrants getting them work off the books.
Mm.
So that's kind of how he makes his living. So there's lots of betrayal that sort of happens there as well.
Yes.
So yes, it does have gay content and it's not really handled in any way different to any of the other characters, which is actually quite fantastic to see.
Yes.
You know, no big deal is made over it in that respect.
No.
Who's got time, though, with a million subplots?
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I quickly must mention, the thing about this film is that the talent behind the camera, and that's the thing I did really like about this film, why I'm giving it a little bit more than I normally should, is the editing, the music, the cinematography. They're all basically worked with Inarritu before. The cinematographer and the composer for Brokeback Mountain, for example. So, you know, there's some really amazing talent. Like, this is like top draw people behind this film. So visually and orally, I think it's just, it kind of propelled me. But I was disappointed in the film. I'm going to give it 3 stars. Kylie?
Yeah, look, I think visually, and, you know, I can't fault the direction and the camera work and all the performances, but for me, the subject matter is far too grueling and not what I would choose to see. So I'm giving it 2 because of subject matter. 2 out of 5.
And there is a little bit we discussed before. There is a little bit of queer content in this film. And Beautiful is in limited release right now. We'll be listening to Stay Close from DeLorean. This is Pink Popcorn with Kylie and Paul. Enjoy 94.9.
This is a Pink Popcorn podcast.
Ooh, well, that's it for another week of Pink Popcorn. That goes so quickly, Kylie. And a huge thank you to Chrissy Matheson from Acme, who came in and talked about I Killed My Mother and, well, not about her killing her mother, the films I Killed My Mother and Heartbeats, which are coming up at Acme.
Thank you to everyone for listening in. I'd like to give a particular shout out to Leonie, who sent us an SMS and thanked us for a great show. We love you.
We love you,
thank
Leonie.
You.
Fantastic. And up next week, we've actually got a bit of a, there's lots of queer films at the moment in the wake of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. We'll be talking about I Love You, Philip Morris, and also we'll be having a bit of a, talking about Von Dickens, a bit of a look into the German Film Festival, and a film, Sasha, which was actually in the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, but it's playing in the German as well. So if you missed it, another chance. It's
another
actually
chance.
A really fabulous film.
Also, coming up next is Adam Todd. He has got an amazing band cab this week, chock full of interviews with The Script, The Little Stevies, and also The Lights Are Performing Live.
Wow.
So stay tuned to Joy 94.9.
So please stay in contact with us via Facebook, Twitter, or our blog. All the links are at joy.org.au/pinkpopcorn. And there's also a podcast in case you want to listen to us again and 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 again. This has been Kylie and Paul on Pink Popcorn. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.